fixer-upper. I haven't seen you since last decade.
I knew it.
You knew I was going to do it.
I knew it.
See, I didn't even get the reaction I wanted.
No, but you still get on the inside. I got that reaction. I'm like, oh.
He's like, I'm not going to give it to her. Yeah, I'm not going to give her this.
But earlier when you did it, well played. Because at first I was just like, oh, yeah, I haven't seen you in a little bit. And then I'm like, wait a second. She knows that I don't deal with that from our prior, those listeners that haven't heard. The prior one was, I hate when people say, the last couple days of December, see you next year, or, you know, I haven't seen you since last year. No, you didn't. Guy, you saw me last week.
Guy, like, that's when you know you're a little agitated when someone throws guy out there in a sentence. But so. Mike Rupp, Jackie Redmond coming at you for this edition of Puck Culture. Thanks for joining us. So I assume then that you put a cap on when you stop saying Happy New Year then, right? Because, you know, your first couple days back at work after the New Year, everybody you see in the hall, doesn't matter if you've ever spoken before, it's a, hey, Happy New Year, Happy New Year, Happy New Year. You say it like 100 times in the span of a day.
Yeah.
Where do you stop? Where do you draw the line? 2 days?
I think I said it yesterday. So
went past the line for
did
me.
Did I? Where's your line?
For me, I mean, it depends where New Year's falls. But for me, I was like, once the weekend passes and it's Monday, the start of a new week, it's over. There's no need to say Happy New Year
true.
Anymore.
I probably agree. I think I do it as almost like a closing of a conversation with someone I'm not, like, I don't talk to all the time.
Right, right.
So, like, if I'm, like, that's how I used it yesterday. It was just like, oh, yeah, instead of saying, all right, I'll talk to you later. I'm like, oh, yeah, see ya, Happy New Year.
Yeah.
You know, boom, done.
Like, yeah, but, like, if it's, like, January 10th and you're still throwing out Happy New Year, it's like, all right, the month's almost half
okay,
over. Let's
let's
move on. But it is a new decade, and we started off with some big news in the NHL yesterday. Let's talk about the Nashville Predators because they've been a really interesting team the first half. They fired Peter Laviolette. We talked about it on last week's podcast about whether or not they should make a coaching change. They've made it. They hire John Hines 35 days after he was let go by the New Jersey Devils. What do you tweeted about this pretty quickly after the news came out that John Hines was going to be the guy, and you like that hire. Why?
I like it because, first off, you always get a little bit of an uptick from any coaching change, right? We
right.
know this. We've seen this. Why I think he's good systematically for that team is because he's a guy that was a part of the, you know, the Penguins regime. He was in Wilkes-Barre, Scranton, and that's the time with Ray Shiro and Dan Bylsma in Pittsburgh. And I went to the Penguins, and everything that these guys would run, I mean, these practices were very up-tempo, the pace of practice. I remember getting to Pittsburgh, and I started thinking to myself, because I came from New Jersey where everything was very defensive-oriented, and I was going to Pittsburgh where it was like, go, 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 we want offense. And I remember practices where I'm like,
wait, defense was the focus for the Devils?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So it ended up getting to the point where I was like, I don't know, I'm like, I don't know if I can make it through practice. Like, it was that bad. I mean, it was such an adjustment in practice. So I'm like keeled over, and other guys are okay because they're used to it. And so I'm kind of like, but we had an identity in the way we played that way. I think that that's what John Hines has always had, and he brought it to New Jersey. That's why they made the playoffs in that first year. I mean, the players did a lot there, but systematically they surprised teams. They were going, going, going. That's what Nashville needs, and they've got the guys to play that way. So I think that it's, you know, I talked to Patty Eliash about John Hines when he took over.
Name drop.
And Patty had a bad knee at the end of his career, and he was out of the lineup, and he was starting to get back in, and he said to me, he goes, I wish it was 5 years, 7 years, 10 years I had this guy before, you know, 10
really?
Years before. He goes, he wants to play, defense is a priority. It is for every coach in the National Hockey League, but he wants you to play to your strengths. He wants you to go. He wants you to be playing with speed and pace, and his practices reflect that. So, you know, and that was a situation where Patty wasn't even really playing because of his injury. So he was just like, I wish I could play for it. Like, and all the guys
like,
I talked to,
the
they want to play
different.
For him. Yeah, he's a great guy. I think it'll be good because they've got guys. They need to start. They need to start defending better. They need to get better goaltending. They need better defending in front of that goaltender, whether it's Pekka or UC Saros. But they need to start playing to their strength. And they have a pretty dang good roster.
Yeah, they do. And I think that's why it's been so surprising to sort of watch this team this season and say, how is this team that on paper looks really good and that was in a Stanley Cup final just a couple of seasons ago, how are they struggling this much? And I thought it was interesting in the press conference yesterday that David Poile kept hammering home the point. This was a hard decision. This isn't Peter's fault.
No.
He really put the onus on the players, with the exception of Roman Josi. He was like, people have not played to their potential on this team. They need to be accountable. It's my fault and it's the players' fault. As a former player, when you hear a GM come on and really, not, I don't want to say point the finger because it wasn't that way, but really turn the attention to the players on the roster and say, this is on you guys to turn this around, how does a player receive that?
Goes two ways. You have it from a negative standpoint where you could look at it and turn it into a positive. We're next. There's nobody else in line in front of us that's going to take the heat.
Right.
The head coach already has. Players are next. But then you also look at it from the standpoint of a new coach. You can rewrite the script.
Yeah.
And I find that coaches a lot of times, I'm going to use this as an example. I don't know what the team's going to do with Kyle Turris.
Sure.
Kyle Turris has struggled last year. Kyle Turris has been up and down this year. As far as playing well and not playing well. Here's a guy that the script was written for him under Laviolette already.
Mm-hmm.
If Peter Laviolette was still the coach right now, I don't feel like you're going to see Kyle Turris be given prime minutes and
right.
prime situations, because he's had enough of a runway with Laviolette to be this
he's
is kind
of
where
he is.
He's
been healthy, scratched a bunch of times, yeah.
But now there's a new guy coming in. And when there's a new coach coming in.
Is anyone more excited about a new coach than Kyle Turris? Maybe not.
He's probably
very ignited by
right,
that.
Right, but you look at it and look at it from John Hines' point of view. He comes in here and he's probably looking at this roster and he's like, all right, what things need to change? Everybody needs to play a little bit better. Systematically, we got to play better. But I need more out of this player. I mean, Kyle Turris makes a lot of money. He's a big piece. He was a big piece in that trade.
Yeah.
And it hasn't worked out. So as a coach, you're motivated to get this guy going. So you're going to see, I think, Kyle Turris' minutes get bumped up. He's going to be put in these situations. How long it's going to last, that's up to Kyle Turris. But I think that when you're...
But it's a fresh opportunity.
It's a fresh opportunity, and a coach wants to do something different. So the problem that I always thought of is, like, if you were the other coach's guy.
Right. Like, then you're a little nervous.
If you were Lavi's guy and the team was struggling, but you were putting in all those positions... Now maybe you should be concerned.
Everyone on the roster, it's like a fresh slate, basically, because it's like, all right, this is a new guy coming in. It doesn't matter who you are. This is a new coach, which means you got to make a first impression. You got to show John Hines why he can trust you. It's like building that trust with your coach to play in certain situations.
Yeah, I mean, you can rewrite the script, and you could be a fourth line guy. If you play and you contribute and you do something in the next two games, three games, next thing you know, life is flipped on its head.
I don't want to, this might be a crazy thing to say, but you look at the Nashville Predators on paper, great roster, tough first half. They remind me of St. Louis a little bit last mm-hmm. year. I mean, they didn't come into the season with all these crazy changes, but they came into the season with a great roster on paper, a roster that people thought was for sure a playoff team, and they've struggled, just like the Blues first half of last year, they struggled. Could the Predators be a team that after a few practices under their belt with John Hines, really turns it around? They're only 5 points out, I think, if my memory serves. So could they be a team that all of a sudden, second half, new coach, we see go on a bit of a run here?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, they're a team that certainly has the pieces in place to do it. I mean, they're in win-now mode. What they've done the last number of years, every year they're just pushing all the chips in and they're going for it. So that's still where it is right now. The only difference I see, they're really having a hard time defending this year, and their goaltending hasn't been great, and those things coincide, go hand in hand. St. Louis defended well.
Yeah, true.
Even when they were losing, they weren't defending really good, and they weren't getting good goaltending.
For the record, let me state for our listeners, I'm not saying I think the Predators are going to go win a cup. I'm just saying
they could
be a team that really
that surprises.
Looks like a Jekyll and Hyde between first and second half.
Yeah, and then you sit there and you look. I mean, the bottom line, you got to get goaltending. And we know how important Jordan Binnington was, and what he did really sustained a lot of things. So, Pekka's got to be better. And the guys in front of them got to be better. But I think what can also help them is there's a lot of forwards that are underachieving on the offensive side. And getting more points is going to help the goalie. It's going to help your team defense as well. So, they could. There'd be a scary team if they get going.
You know what I feel like about the Nashville? I feel like they don't necessarily have a game-breaking player. Yeah. You know, they have good players. Like, Matt Duchene's a good player. But is he a game-breaking player? Is he that guy that kind of like puts the team on his back, like we see with a Nathan MacKinnon or a Sidney Crosby or one of these? I don't know. I don't know if the Preds have that.
Yeah.
That singular superstar player.
Yeah, I think that's what's tough, and that's what that organization and David Poile's. Go back to the Seth Jones trade. Seth Jones for Ryan Johansson. They needed a number one center. Ryan Johansson was a guy that was kind of on the outs with Torts in Columbus, and he was a guy where there's question on his work ethic and these things. He's a very talented player. I like his progression, but he's still not, you know, he's not a Connor McDavid. He's
That's
not
what I'm
a
saying,
Jack Eichel.
Like he's a great player.
Yes, he's a very great.
But he's not
very good
a
player.
Superstar, like game breaking, series breaking, changing, winning player.
So now you got Matt Duchene, and he's been okay. You know, so they're very good players, but I feel like those players are complementary players to teams. Like,
well, that's well said.
Yeah, like if one of those players went to. You know, a team that's established already, then that could put them over the top. But to be driving forces, that's why they
it
have to
like,
play good team
you know,
defense.
It's like Phil Kessel on the Leafs, right? Like when he was the guy, still a great player, all-star player. But when he went to the Penguins, we saw just how useful and valuable he can be when he's in a specific role as a complementary player to the big guns like Crosby and Malkin, et cetera.
Yeah, no, it's a valid point. When you have those guys are, you know, the little bug shields you have on the front of your vehicle? You remember those things?
Yes.
I don't know if those actually work. You always see the little thing on the front. Those guys are like bug shields to those. You don't like that one?
Just, I'll let you finish the metaphor first.
That's my metaphor, so it came out. They're the bug shields to the secondary scores. We're going to take the heat. We're going to take all the fly guts in our face, and you're going
to
go out there and you're going to provide.
Matchups and it's going to open
We're
going to
take the pressure. Yeah. They're talking about us. They're coming for us. You go do your thing. Those types of players, the Duchene, the Johanssons, I think that they're more in that category, which is still great because Phil.
Yes.
Like you mentioned,
player.
Phil very easily could have won the Conn Smythe.
Yes.
And
a lot of people think he should have.
The Pens probably don't win those two cups without Phil. But you got to also think Phil did the job, but you also had some other guys that were being talked about.
He was able to do the job because he had players that were taking a lot of the attention away from Phil.
When you went in Toronto, you knew 81's my guy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He was the number one circled guy during his time with
the
Leafs.
And he still got it done, which made him a great goal scorer.
Exactly. But, exactly. But in terms of winning, right? As a team,
as a team,
it's different.
No.
So we'll see. We'll see how the Predators do. But the good news for Preds fans is that they're not out of it. Like 5 points is not a lot. And I believe they have a couple games in hand. So we'll see if John Hines can turn this thing around. He doesn't have much time. We also got to talk about Justin Williams.
Yeah.
He's back.
I love it.
What do you think of this?
I think it's awesome. I think we all probably suspected he never really gave closure to anything. He kind
Anytime
of left
a player stops
open.
Playing, but they're just contemplating their future.
Yeah. We'll see what's going to happen.
Chances
here.
Are good that they're probably going to lace him up again.
I mean, I find it to be a really smart move. I mean, you don't have to do training camp. You kind of assess where the team's at. If the team's not in the right spot. You got a beautiful family. You're living life.
It's a great strategy when you really break it down.
But if the team's clicking, maybe you can add to the ring collection a little bit and you come back. And that's what we did.
Especially coming off last year, right? Like the Hurricanes make it to the conference final. They have this crazy run. It's like, oh, do I have another year in me?
Yeah.
Like, well, if they're going to like come close to maybe winning something, like maybe I got half a year in me. Maybe I'll just like suss it out over the first half of the season, avoid injury for a few months. And, you know, as an older guy, have fresher legs for that playoff push. Like that's actually very beneficial to both the player and the organization.
You got to be a special player. I was just joking about it. Like, oh, he's choosing not to do training camp and like what. No, you got to be a special player to do it because he's coming back and he might not play in the same role that he did play in prior.
Right.
And just even dating back to last year, he's still a leader. He's a guy that has Stanley Cup success. And he's got three cups.
Yeah, his nickname tells you just how clutch
Mr.
he can
Game
be.
7. So, so that's all there. He's a huge piece of that team. But this team's actually been doing pretty good. And there doesn't look to be that much room in the top six. So you can't do that if you're a GM and a coach. You can't do that with everybody. They did it with Mike Fisher.
Right. Yeah, in Nashville.
In Nashville, but because Mike Fisher's a great team guy. Justin Williams is a great team guy. Justin Williams could be in the top six, or he could be a fourth liner. But right. He's okay with that because he wants to be a part of the solution in any way, shape, or form.
But regardless of where they put him in that lineup when he actually, you know, enters a game for the first time this season, what does that do to whoever gets taken out of the lineup? Yeah. I mean, I know it's Justin Williams, so it probably makes the pill easier to swallow, but you still got to swallow the pill.
Yeah.
So, like, someone has to come out of the lineup, right? And this is a point you made earlier when we were talking about
yeah,
this.
Yeah, it's tough because you could be the greatest team guy, but you have to have a certain level of self-interest. That's where your drive's coming from, mm-hmm. right? So your drive's coming from your team-oriented goals as well, but you have to have something. Like, if the team is winning 10 games in a row and I haven't gotten a shot on goal, there's nothing wrong with me in a selfish way not being happy with myself.
Well, fair.
Right? Like, that's what I mean. I mean, you're not going to pout. You're winning. Life's
right.
good. You're winning without me. Like,
now,
let me get going.
Now, if that being upset with yourself leads to you not passing to a guy wide open
yeah.
in the slot,
going,
then you might have a little bit of an issue.
Or you go on the road and you're not socializing. Yeah.
Everyone's going for dinner.
And
you're like, nah, I'm good.
But to demand more, I don't think you make it to this level unless you do that. So, you know, I think that it's, you know, a situation that, you know, when a guy comes out of the lineup, there's going to be somebody that's not happy. And I remember when I was in Jersey, Brendan Shanahan was kind of in the same situation maybe as Justin Williams, was maybe going to play again, you know, and it was well into the season in Jersey. And we end up picking up Brendan Shanahan. Which is great. I mean, you're talking about a Hall of Famer.
Shanny,
yeah. And so Shanny comes in. But what no one really saw is, expected, was Jay Pandolfo was then a scratch. Jay Pandolfo won like five straight years of the players voted on him as being the player's player. You know,
right.
He's our favorite teammate. He's a guy who goes to battle, and he's won two cups. He's a defensive shutdown guy. He's out of lineup, and it kind of... Jay was unbelievable. He never pouted. He never said any word about it.
Right.
But all of us were kind of like, it's like our heartbeat was taken out of the locker room. He's funny. He was this and that. And it's like, it took a while. It has nothing to do with Shanny.
No.
He's Brendan Shanahan. But it'll be interesting to see what the fallout is because of it. Who's out? How does that guy respond? All those good
How
things.
How does Justin Williams sort of transition from not playing for the last 4 months to actually playing again? So it'll be an interesting storyline for sure, but they don't call him Mr. Game 7 for nothing.
No.
So I'm sure the Hurricanes are very excited to have him back.
I'd love to see
him
in another Game 7.
Oh,
come on.
Wouldn't that be just like a
great,
come on. One more Game 7 moment from
yes.
Justin Williams. Oh, maybe we'll get it.
I would love it.
Playoffs aren't that far away. Like half a season to go. But Carly Zucker is going to join the show right now. Let's get to her. She's one of my favorite follows on Twitter. She's like, absolutely, you follow her, I assume. She's hilarious.
Yeah, yeah.
Hilarious. So Carly, thanks for taking the time to chat with us today. We appreciate it.
Yeah, I mean, I took some time away from Twitter to make this happen. I mean, poor Jason. That seems to be what I'm most known for. Probably what he's most known for too.
You know what though? Like, and I'm not even just blowing smoke. Like, you are like the Chrissy Teigen of hockey Twitter. Like, you're like, I'm not even joking. Like, anyone listening to this in podcast form or watching on YouTube right now, if you don't follow Carly, press pause right now. Go check out some of her tweets. She has no fear at all. She makes fun of her husband all the time on Twitter. And then come back and listen to the duration of this interview, because I think you'll appreciate it more if you do so. So I love you on Twitter. My question for you is, what does Jason think of your Twitter stardom, your social media stardom?
That's such a good question. He says he knows when he leaves a game if he shouldn't open Twitter, because he knows that it'll just be a barrage of at him that he doesn't even want to read. So he'll call me after the game and he'll be like, did you tweet?
I'm like, did you tweet?
Just based on the fact that he's got all these notifications.
Yeah. And so I usually apologize. And then, but I mean, we've had that conversation so many times where I tell him it's all in good fun. He knows that. He knows who he married. And so, I mean, it's worse for him at home than on Twitter. So that's easy. That's the easy part.
I actually sent him. I just told Jackie before we came on. I don't know. My last 2 years playing, I played in Minnesota. I don't think I met you when I was there, though. But anyways, Jason was a good buddy, and I just texted him. I was trying to get him to throw it. This is his opportunity, throw it like a jab out of left field that you wouldn't see coming, but he hadn't gotten back to me. They're on the road, aren't they?
Well, he's not right now because he's injured.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So he broke his fibula a couple, like right before Christmas, and had surgery on that. So he's just getting back into skates right now. So he's not traveling, but he's just not as funny as I am.
Yeah, well, so that's why.
And he doesn't want to be outed on Puck Culture. It's like if he gives a chirp out and it's not good, people are like, oh, wow.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah. So this is your opportunity now. Do you want to throw a little shot at him? Because, you know, I'm...
Just go to her Twitter account.
Yeah, just go there and, yeah, no, he's one that can laugh it off. He's got a good personality to laugh it off, right?
Yes, and it was funny. We were talking about coming on Puck Culture today, and I was talking to him because we definitely didn't meet, but he was telling me that you're a great storyteller and that you're really, really funny. And I said,
that's a lot of pressure.
Now you got to live up to that, Rupper.
No. Yeah, so you're a great, Jackie, is he a great storyteller?
He does. You know what? Rupper does tell good stories. On this podcast alone, he's told 3 different stories about almost running over celebrities. So, like, Rupper's had an interesting life.
Carly, that's kind of my thing. Just
saying. You don't want to run into him on the road at all.
Literally.
Okay, like, not on skates, like, with an actual
vehicle.
No,
with a vehicle, yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, a motor vehicle. Anyways, he's told the stories on the show before, but yes, that is true. I don't know how funny Rupper is, but he's a good storyteller.
Yeah, I don't know how to take that, but I don't know how to exactly take that.
You're fun, but you're not like, you know, you're not like stand-up comedian.
Yeah,
funny.
No, I got what you're saying. Yeah, so no, that especially my last couple years in Minnesota, that's, you know, I was a veteran guy and I like to have fun, and you know, we had fun there in Minnesota. So
let me ask you this, Carly. I talk about how you're one of my favorite hockey Twitter follows, and I'm sure there are a lot of hockey fans out there that feel the same. Who's your favorite Twitter follow? Like, who do you like following?
Oh, I like to follow.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Chrissy Teigen is hysterical because I feel like she has such a great sense of humor. Also, I feel like she just doesn't take life too seriously. And so anytime I'm following someone who can joke, I mean, obviously there's things that need to be taken seriously, but I feel like if you just don't take your life too seriously, like, it's a fun follow. So obviously I like Chrissy Teigen. I discovered this girl the other day, and I don't remember her handle right now, but she's extremely inappropriate, like shockingly inappropriate.
Sometimes the best follows.
Right. Like, I mean, I could probably say it on a podcast, but not on the radio. You can repeat anything she says on the radio, but she's really, really funny. And so I can't remember hers right now, but yeah, I mean, Twitter's just a gem of people to follow.
I've got one that I gave to Jackie, and we get chuckles.
I knew you were going to bring this up. It's a good one.
It's a dumb one. It's kind of like it's almost like dad joke type funny, right? Like, it's not.
I don't think it's dad joke funny. I just think it's silly
random.
Funny.
It's silly funny. It's faces and things. Faces and things is one. And my favorite Twitter follow is Rex Chapman. I don't know. You guys follow Rex Chapman?
I don't.
You got to follow him. He's unbelievable. Do you follow him?
I do. And he pops up constantly. And he always posts funny videos.
It's unbelievable. He posts, but the reactions he gets. So obviously he's a player in the NBA, retired. But the people that follow him, I'm not even going through the list of people, but the responses, the replies.
Right.
I mean, they're like celebrities from all over different parts. He's like that good of a follow.
Oh, that's crazy. I got to follow him.
No, but one thing I do notice, and maybe you could talk about it a little bit, is I noticed the great work you and Jay are doing up there with the Give 16. Can you tell the listeners some of the things you guys are doing there with the hospital up in Minnesota and all that good stuff?
Yeah, thank you. Well, I mean, obviously really important to us for anybody who doesn't know the story. In 2016, we met a boy named Tucker Hellstrom at the University of Minnesota Masonic Children's Hospital. He had osteosarcoma. We became very close with him. Jason became really, really close with Tucker. I became really close with his family, developed a great friendship. And unfortunately, not long after we met him, he passed away. And so we launched the Give 16 campaign to raise funds for the hospital because the experience we had there was really top-notch as far as the nurses and the doctors and the staff and everything they do. So we really wanted to do something there to improve the lives of the patients. And so launched Give 16, which was encouraging people to give in the form of 16. And I say this all the time, but we had kids giving us $16 at the rink. I would have kids walk up to me and just give me $16 and truly, it made such a massive difference. And in a year, in one hockey season, we raised over $1 million.
And so,
oh, my gosh. In one season?
Yeah, in
that's
one
awesome.
Hockey season. And so we opened a space called the Zucker Family Suite and Broadcast Studio where kids can go and try their hand at broadcasting. They play trivia and bingo and all sorts of great things in a state-of-the-art broadcast studio at the hospital. So that was really important to us to open. Now we are spending time in there. I host bingo a lot. I host trivia there. We go and the kids can interview Jason. And so that's a big part of it. Programming is what we ask for funds now, because really we need programming for years and years to come so that the space doesn't, you know, fall apart and end up closing. And so we will continue to raise money forever, as long as we can, to keep that space open and running in the best shape that it can be. So we do an event called Give 16 Honors, where we honor 16 other people in the community for the great work they're doing. And through that, we also raise funds for the space. So that's what we're up to. We do a hat campaign every year where Jason actually has his hand in designing 16 custom hats that we sell online through Unreal. And that will be launched here relatively soon, so people can hopefully look out for that on our social media. And that's what we have going on. Yes, it's lots of great stuff. We love it. We love the campaign. It's really important to us.
We love you guys doing that. I mean, that does I love when you see, especially when you see a couple getting together and doing things for both interests. I mean, that's awesome.
Yeah,
so good,
it sounds
props
like
to you guys.
An awesome campaign. I'm going to have to keep a lookout for those hats. Like, we're hat people, Rupper. So
yeah,
we'll have to keep an eye out for those hats. So that sounds really cool. And a really, really great way to raise money, too, by getting some style out there as well. But, you know, for a couple that is so generous with their time and raising money through that campaign, I was shocked to see on Twitter a couple of weeks ago that you guys were going to Vegas, and Jason was in first class and you were sitting one row behind first class. Fill us in on I mean, you can see some of the tweets on Twitter to put this into context if you're listening to this interview right now. But my whole question was like, how did this come to be? How did this end up being the situation that you were in on this flight?
Okay, so this is a great story. So my sister and I flew to Vegas to watch him play. Unfortunately, he didn't play because when we got there, we found out he had the broken fibula. So
right.
We went out there because that's his hometown. So his whole family is there. So it's the game we all want to go to. We brought donors from the hospital. It was going to be this great thing. Watch Jason play out there. And of course, that's the game where he's hurt.
Oh.
So my sister and I fly out there, and we didn't need to fly first class. Like sometimes we do with the kids, you know, there's more space. It's great. But I didn't need to fly first class. So I booked my sister, like our flight, and we're sitting in regular seats. And then Jason is like, oh, well, I'm just going to fly home with you guys because I get to stay. I'm going to stay for the game. You know that sometimes you guys would fly back early if you're injured and just get home. But
right.
He wanted to stay. So he flies back with us on the same flight the next day. And just so happens that he is in first class directly in front of me, which could not have been. I mean, that is just gold to me, because as soon as he sits down, I'm thinking I'm trolling him this entire flight. Like, this is going to be great. So as soon as he sat down, I just start snapping pictures of him. And every time we got food, and I was in a middle seat. And yeah, so it was just a great opportunity for me again to use Twitter to my advantage and troll poor Jason. So the team flew him back, and that's why he was in first class. And then I booked my own flight. Just like a common person, as we do,
yeah.
And sat in regular seats. And so, yeah, it was just another opportunity for me to troll him on Twitter.
And by the way, for anyone listening, the middle seat should get the armrests, right? Because
oh, yeah.
The window
the,
has the wall
I, yes,
and
yep.
The aisle has the extra sort of personal space.
I will tell you that I did not that day. I was sandwiched in just with no armrests.
Oh.
And, yeah, and so I was suffering, you guys. And Jason was enjoying his yogurt with a fork, which is completely psychotic. Yes, he was eating his yogurt with a fork. Who does that?
That's crazy. Rubber. That is out of left field.
Yeah, they kind of draw the line somewhere. I think that's it. You know, with a fork. Why is it? Is it like a parfait? Does he have a bunch of stuff in there? Like, does he have strawberries he needs to poke at? Or is it like,
you can scoop them with a spoon.
Just straight yogurt?
Just a straight yogurt with a fork. It was.
Wow. That's weird. Yeah, that's
something
really
out of a horror film. Yeah, so that just helped me. And the great thing was is that he had no clue until we landed that I had tweeted anything.
So he got off the flight to all these people probably just roasting him.
Yeah, so that's great.
The one thing I've always thought about, too, is because you're from Minnesota originally, right?
Yeah, I was born in New Hampshire, but grew up in St. Cloud, Minnesota.
Okay, so you're St. Cloud, Minnesota. You married a man that's from Vegas. I mean, you can't find two different. Oh, let me give you a snapshot here, and you know well as anybody, but just for the listeners, Vegas wasn't in the league when I was playing, but Arizona was similar-ish weather, I guess. You know, there was a time when I was playing for the Wild that we were in. I think it was 80 degrees in Arizona. Finished the game, got on a flight, flew back to Minneapolis, got off the plane, it was minus 20, 100 degree swing.
Wow.
Like that, like totally messed with you, right? Like you're going just from one to the extreme to the other. You two, I mean, was he originally a softie when he got there with the cold weather? Like where's the balance here? Like you guys balance each other out, because you're used to the cold weather, he's used to Vegas. I mean, that's like two extremes there.
Yeah, for the first 4 years we were together, he didn't own a winter coat. That's not
what?
Yeah.
He would go from one indoor garage to the other indoor garage. So he never spent any time outside.
You guys lived down in Minneapolis then when you were at that time?
Yes, yeah.
So the listeners, a lot of Minneapolis is connected, you know, just like Winnipeg's like
Winnipeg
that.
With like the underground.
Yeah, the underground, the bridges are, you know, the connecting
buildings.
That's
when you know you live somewhere cold, when they have infrastructure underground.
So you don't have to go outside. But I'm just picturing Jason walking somewhere and probably taking him like nine times longer to get there because he doesn't want to go outside as opposed to just having a coat and just walking across the street.
You admire the commitment though. I'm not getting a winter jacket.
That's true.
Yeah, no winter jacket, no winter boots, no snow pants, nothing. And I grew up snowboarding, skating outside, skiing. So I'm snowmobiling. I covered snowcross for CBS Sports Network. So I mean, I was always outside doing something in the winter. And it's really important to me that the kids have an activity. So once the kids are, you know, getting old enough to be outside, Jason had to dive in and get some winter gear because I said, you're going outside with us to skate out at the outdoor rinks or, you know, build snowmen, like just be outside. And so now he has to. But we grew up totally different in that sense that he did not own a winter coat until maybe a year or two ago.
Let me ask you this. Obviously, you know, he's hurt right now, so he's not traveling. He's at home with you, which changes things in season, right? I mean, he's home. You're not used to him being home all the time during the season. But for you, it's got to be a little bit of like a silver lining to that because, you know, you don't have to worry about packing. You don't have to worry about you have extra help with the kids, right? Like, is there sort of like a silver lining to this situation for you?
Sure. That's what we'll call it. It's great. Well, it was October and November for the Wild. They were gone almost completely through those months. And half of December. So, I mean, those guys had long road trips and they were just gone a ton. I think we had maybe three home games or something in the first month. It was crazy. And so we didn't see them a lot for the first couple months. So now having them home, it almost felt like we were back in off season because he was just all of a sudden home all the time. And it's funny because, like, we get into great routines where when they're gone, I know everything. I know my schedule. I know what I'm doing. We just do it all without him. So when he's here, he kind of stands around like, well, what do I do? Do you want me to do something? And we just kind of keep moving because that's what we do. And so now I'm just coming up with lists of things for him to do.
when
they're on the road. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, hey. We're finding our groove, but hopefully he's back soon playing, and so we'll get back into that routine.
Hey, Carly, I want to ask you about, and you know, not necessarily to dive into it, but just to let the fans know that, and I think this is something that's real that all players and their families deal with, and you know, there was last year where there's those rumors that Jason was traded, and those that came up a few times. You know, we don't need to discuss that. He's with the Wild. I hope he stays with the Wild for a very long time. But how does that affect you guys? You have a family and you're invested and rooted into the area too. So when you're hearing those things kicking around, maybe you could just give a snapshot of what that looks like from, you know, because you got to be the glue in that situation to kind of keep everything situated and deal with the kids when that moment's there. And kind of how did you navigate through that?
Yeah, for sure. I'm very transparent. I do radio here in Minneapolis, and I've always been really transparent about those situations and about our lives. And I think when we were first together, before we were married, I was more worried about it because I had Sophia prior to Jason, who's our oldest daughter, and I wouldn't have been able to leave. And to me, that was a little bit scarier. Now that we have really established a home here and we have the kids and I feel like I have a groove with work and a much more of a schedule, I kind of look at it like this is a very short time in our lives. If he ends up traded, that's the nature of the business and we'll figure it out. I was just saying how they're gone. He was gone almost October and November. We don't see him a lot anyway during the season, and they're extremely busy and focused on hockey, that if we were apart for some of those times, that would be okay. And we would see him when we could, and we would go to wherever he is and spend the time that we could. But again, it's so short-lived. I mean, let's say he plays another 10 years, which would be incredible in this league. That's still a really, really short time in our lives. And so that's how we look at it. Plus, it's also a really great adventure. A lot of these teams are in wonderful cities. And so it's also an opportunity to experience something new and to expose the kids to something new. And so, yes, I mean, Minnesota's home. We love the Wild. It's a phenomenal organization. We love the team. We want to be here. And he's always said that. But again, the nature of the business is that anything can happen anytime. And that's okay. And so I just think you figure it out as you go. And everybody's situations are very different. And so we'll navigate that when it comes. Jason's always been great about not worrying about something till it happens. So he's not a worrier by nature.
Good trait to have.
I am a little bit more. But yeah, he worries about it when it happens.
All right, one more for you, Carly. You mentioned the radio gig there. For our listeners, especially for our listeners out in Minnesota, what is the radio show? What's it all about? Give us sort of a take on kind of what you're up to in that space.
Yeah, I predominantly do radio now. It's 100.3 KFAN here in Minnesota. It has a great following. The Power Trip Morning Show, I guest once a week on their show. It's supposed to be sports, but it's mostly nonsense, and it's a really fun show. The guys that run it are great. And then I have my own show on Fridays that's called Overtime, which I talk to athletes or sports figures in our community about why they give back the way that they do and about events that they are coming up and why they are involved in certain philanthropic work. And so we try to get to the heart of what they do, why they do what they do. So I host that once a week as well. And so that's mostly what I'm doing. And then some TV gigs when they pop up. Otherwise, yeah, that's about it. And then the kids, 3 kids, lots of busy stuff.
Oh, no big deal, just 3 kids. Well, you sound like your schedule is jam-packed. We appreciate you coming on the show and hanging out with us. Tell Jason we say hello, and yes. Good luck getting back. And thanks for doing this. We'll see you down the line, I'm sure.
Yeah, thank you guys so much. Great to talk to you.
All right, busy schedule for Carly Zucker, to say the least. 3 kids, she does radio, she tweets like Chrissy Teigen, she's got a marriage, she's got her husband injured at home, so... certainly no shortage of things to do for her.
No, she's staying busy. And I love the work, again. Let's just cap that. The work that they do.
I mean, it can't be said enough. Like, they give back so much. But we'll have to keep an eye out for those hats.
We got to get one of those Give 16 hats.
Yeah, well, we'll have to make a donation.
Yeah, we'll do that.
And get ourselves some of those hats. I didn't know that Jason designed hats, so that's pretty cool, too.
Neither did I.
Igor Shesterkin, called up by the New York Rangers in the game last night against the Colorado Avalanche, of all teams. And the goalie situation for the Rangers just gets a little bit more intriguing, Rupper.
It's interesting.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, coming into this season, from my understanding, the way that the Rangers were going to handle this situation was they knew they were going to have Henrik Lundqvist and Georgiev being their goaltenders in New York. Shesterkin was going to get, from what I was told, 20 out of the first 25 starts in the American League.
Right.
See how he does, and then make a decision on where things are at. He got the lion's share there, and he lit the American League on fire. I mean, he's been unbelievable there. So I think, you know, that has showed them, well, this guy might be ready now.
Right.
Does this mean now that he's getting the call that he's going to be here the rest of the year? I don't know if that's the case.
I
probably don't think it's the case. But for the time being, and the selection of the game is what gets me.
Like, because it's the Avs.
The Avs, the top offense in the league. So I'm like, wait. So I started thinking, I'm like, why would you why would you bring the kid, the future?
Well, here's the thing. Let me ask you this, because the one thing that stood out yesterday about what David Quinn said to the media was, that's just a natural progression, right? Yeah. Natural progression. You have two goaltenders.
Two great goaltenders.
Yes. So to me, I think about it, and then EJ says on the show yesterday, well, you know, he's got an opt-out. He can go back to the KHL if he feels like he's not going to be playing in the NHL anytime soon. So do you buy that from David Quinn, just a natural progression, or do you think the decision was more calculated?
I think it was more calculated. I think it was to see where he's at, to give him a taste, to there's a situation in the schedule that permitted getting another guy into the mix. I think they probably still look at some point here before the trade deadline to trade Georgiev. But I also looked at it as you want to get a reaction where see where a guy's at, right? And put him in this game. I think it was very calculated that it was against Colorado. At first I was like, why would you do that to the kid?
Yeah, what are you trying to do?
Why would you do that? But then I was like, you know what? I bet you they're doing it because either way they get a reaction, right? So here's a kid, say he comes up and he, not that he gets a shutout or does great in the game.
Right, just looks
good. That's just going to fuel him more. Like, okay, he's arrived, he did this, and you kind of get a good assessment where he's at. But if it doesn't go that way and the Avs do what they do to a lot of goalies, they chase them, score five or six on them early in the game. That also, because Shesterkin has that out clause to go in the KHL, this guy's a competitor. That's why he came over. He came over here to play in the National Hockey League. So if his first game against the best offense, he gets shelled, I think that pushes his buttons to be like, all right, I'm going to show these guys. I got some work to do.
Right.
I'm going to be back. So I think either way is a great call by them.
But it also makes either way, like to your point, makes Shesterkin realize, okay, I thought I was ready, but maybe I do have a little bit of work to do. So then there's no like frustration or anything within the Rangers organization about not being up yet.
And
permanently.
And there's no harm being done here if the rest of the year, if they go Georgiev and Lundqvist, and he's down in the American League still playing of the last, say, 40 games, another 25 games.
Yeah.
I mean, that's fantastic. I mean, he's just, and then next year I think he'd be full go, ready to go. But I don't know. I'm thinking that they'll get a few more starts in here with them, and then it might be decision-making time.
I think you almost have to trade Georgiev before the deadline, right? His value's high. He's having a good season.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't know what's going to happen, right, the rest of the way.
Yeah, I mean they've got an embarrassment of riches at that position, but they got a lot of different options they could do there.
I still am like, come on, Hank. Like I want to see Hank win a cup.
I do too.
I really do, and I know he's not going to move. He said it a million times, but to me, I'm like, come on, Hank. Don't you just want one last kick at the can? You know, don't you want one last opportunity to at least play for a cup?
Yeah.
It's not going to happen for the Rangers next year.
I think that when I look at the situation,
like I would be all for it. Like if one day Hank was like, you know what, I'm going to pull the Cujo. Like I want to go to a contender. Yeah. I would be like, good for you.
I loved playing with Henrik Lundqvist. If that situation, and I'm not in his headspace to your point, I want to see him compete in the Stanley Cup Finals.
Yes.
Again, and I want him to win. I want him to go and be the missing piece somewhere. And I also think what's really best for the Rangers is for him to do that as well.
See, there it is.
So I
because it opens up space, right? Is that why? Is that the reasoning?
Because I think you can get a return on Hank now.
Big return, yeah.
And you can still buy yourself some runway on making a decision with these goalies. Shesterkin's supposed to be the higher-end talent. Georgiev's been really nice too. This is a lot of pressure here on that organization because you now are making a decision on one guy has one game in the league. You know what I mean? And they don't have to make that decision for a little while, so we might get a few more. But like, what if you make the wrong move?
See, this is what I'm gathering from what you're saying is that let's not understate the importance of making the right decision in this situation.
Yeah.
Because it's going to affect the future of the Rangers for the next few seasons. So.
The Rangers should be competing for a cup in, I think, 2 to 3 years. 2 years maybe will start their window of being a true contender. I think they're on that progression. They got another year next year where I think they should be a playoff team or a bubble. Like they should make the playoffs next year. But then that following year and then the year after, I think it's going to open up that window where they are going to win. Okay. With that being said, is Hank going to be your starting goalie in 2 or 3 years? You got to re-sign him. Is he going to be your starting goaltender? I don't know. I don't probably think so. So, you know.
He's 38 in March. So,
yeah.
You know.
So I just think that the team would be in a better place, but it's also tough. I mean, you're talking about the king. I mean, he is New York. He's the king of New York.
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to just, it's a tough spot. And but I think, and another selfish thing that you just said too, I would love to see, how about if San Jose gets things together and starts, you know, and they find a way, I don't know how the heck they would do it salary-wise, but like if they had to find, just think of some of the teams that need a goaltender.
Oh my God.
You know?
So many teams.
Like, yeah, I mean, you're talking about, I mean, it would look weird as hell seeing Hank in another jersey. But how cool would it be to see him mowing through the playoffs? Because he could still do it. Let's not get that misconstrued in this whole thing. I think what's best for the team is probably for him to go somewhere else. I would love for that to him to do that. But he's still dominant. He could still dominate in certain situations. So, I don't know, man. It'll be tough. But the kid, it's been one of the most hyped up call-ups I've seen
in a long time. Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, it's a good situation to be in for the Rangers. But the king is the king for a reason. One of the best goaltenders statistically over the last 10 years. And obviously, as the year was coming to a close and we entered 2020 Rupper, everyone was talking on social media about their all-decade teams. Who would make their all-decade team first and second team? The goaltenders is an interesting situation when it comes to that discussion. But let me ask you this, because we're not going to go through full selections for these all-decade teams. But who's a player that you would put on your all-decade team, so 2010 to 2019, that maybe is against the grain, or maybe someone it's not an obvious pick?
Oof.
Like an under the radar.
I'm kind of gearing mine more towards playoff success.
Okay.
So one that jumps to my mind, they got the attention then because he won a Conn Smythe, but when you're talking that decade of goaltenders,
yes,
you're thinking of Jonathan Quick, you're thinking of Marc-Andre Fleury, Matt Murray, Corey Crawford, Carey Price. Like these, I'm talking about the guys who won the cup
and whatever.
And then, you know, Carey Price and these types of things. But I don't know if there's more dominant performance than Tim Thomas in 2011.
But can you put someone on the all-decade team for a singular season performance?
When it's that dominant, I think you can.
I don't know.
No?
I don't. See, this is the thing about these conversations.
Well, then
the philosophy is different for everyone, right? Some people, it's all about numbers. It's all about who had the most win, like for a goaltender, for example, right? Who had the most wins of the decade? Who had the best save percentage? Who had the best goals against?
Yeah.
Like those sorts of things. And Henrik Lundqvist, you know, is up there in statistically over the last 10 years. But then there's other people who are like, it's all about cups. How many cups did you win? How crucial were you to your team's cup run, whether you're a forward, a defenseman, or a goaltender? To me, it's all about winning.
Yeah.
It is all about winning.
Yeah. No, I just think that Boston does not win that cup without Tim Thomas. Does that mean if you slid...
Right, so you can put him on your...
Does that mean if you slid Carey Price in there instead of Tim Thomas, would you have the same results? I don't know, because I think Tim Thomas was like that out of this world.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's tough because I want to go against the grain because it's too easy to say, well, Jonathan Quick won two cups. You know, was the dominant, because when you're looking at the other goalies, you know, Corey Crawford, I'm just thinking like one that was just
out of this world
clutch, maybe that I didn't see happening.
Here's my thing. And it's not that I think like your number one choice for the all-decade team should be Corey Crawford. But it kind of like, it gets me fired up when I see people talking about it because they talk about Jonathan Quick, they talk about Marc-Andre Fleury, they talk about even Henrik Lundqvist. I see a lot of people talk about him because of the numbers he's put up, the amount of games he's played.
Yeah.
I think he might be the leader in wins in the decade. But then I'm like, Corey Crawford was underrated when he was winning cups.
Yeah.
Now you look at the body of work over the 10 years and he's still underrated.
Yeah.
It's like the guy is not even, for a lot of people, I don't even hear him as part of the conversation. He's just like an off to the side guy that you kind of mention. I'm like, the dude won two cups and had a 932 save and a 924 save in the playoffs of the two cups that he won with Chicago. And I'm like, man, Corey Crawford just perennially. Is
he's
that a word?
Perennial. You know, I'll just change it. He's a perennial.
he's just He's underrated. His whole career, he has not gotten, I think, the credit that he deserves for how important he has been to that franchise. So for me, maybe he's not your number one goaltender for the All-Decade team. Maybe it's a Jonathan Quick, but he's definitely a big-time contender in the conversation.
But I'm thinking of guys that if we're doing All-Decade lineup, obviously Sid's going to be on there. Jonathan Taves, you're going to find a way to get on there. And these types
of guys. Right, you have your obvious people.
Yeah, the obvious ones. I mean, just read off who won the Conn Smythe. Yeah, I mean, those things are pretty important. Or the MVP awards or whatever those situations, whatever one you want to pick. But I like the ones who are clutch that you didn't really necessarily see coming. So Corey Crawford is one as well because he never gets his love. Tim Thomas is one. I would throw Justin Williams in there.
Mr. Game 7. Yes, we talked about him earlier.
I would throw Evgeny Kuznetsov when Washington won. Not that you didn't expect him to do, but did you expect him to do that? Like, I think he had like 32 points
It was ridiculous.
It was absolutely ridiculous, and he could have very easily won the Conn Smythe. He didn't. But you start looking at even when LA was winning the cups, you had like these, you know, the guys on that 70s line were getting it like that.
Right.
And then you had when the HBK line in Pittsburgh, like Phil Kessel's been unbelievable in the past. Like those are things that I like to go with in the decade to be like, all right, who didn't we talk about enough that really helped their team win a cup?
Right.
You can build a pretty fun looking clutch team if you're doing it that way.
Yeah, it's all about the philosophy of how you approach that conversation. Just like the age old debates of like, the greatest players of all time. It's always a battle of championships versus stats and skill and whatever. And people fall on different sides of that argument depending on who you talk to.
So, that's fair.
Anyways, the all-decade discussion is a good one. I want to wrap on this because I did a segment with Barry Trotz the other day. And every time you're on the show, we seem to talk about you and your coaches and different people. And I asked Barry Trotz for life advice for some of the viewers of NHL Network. And it was a pretty fun segment. We talked about whether or not making your bed is a key to success. So I asked you this, Rupper, is making your bed in the morning an essential key to success? Is it a motivator to success?
Did Trotz say it was?
He said, I'm not going to say it's a key to success, but he said, I do make my bed every day, and I believe that it puts you in the right frame of mind to start your day off on a productive note and in the right mindset. So essentially, he said yes.
Yeah. I mean, if you ask me if I make my bed, no, I don't. I have at times, and then sometimes I'll lay on top of the cover so I don't have to make it again.
Wait, what?
Yeah, I mean,
what do you mean? Like you
like
sleep without
there's
blankets?
There's an odd time where I'm like, I'm going to make my bed, and maybe, you know, once every couple weeks I'll make my bed, and then I'll be like, when I go to bed that night, I'm like, I'll just grab another blanket and sleep on top of my bed that's made, so then in the morning I just have to fold one blanket. So then it's like,
I mean, it's kind of intelligent, actually, because then you get to come home to a nice made bed, but you didn't actually have to put any effort
to actually do it.
It.
Yeah, but nothing's better than, I like it even, it's interesting you said that start your day right. I think it ends your day right. When you get into a bed that's made.
Oh, it's nothing
it's
like
perfect,
it.
Perfect, right?
Nothing like
you
it.
You get a shower, you're nice and clean,
yes.
You're getting your freshly. I like to them to smell like clean laundry still, too. You just put the sheets on.
Oh, when you have fresh out of the dryer sheets, it's incredible. But what's the best? You know, I tweeted out that segment yesterday, and so many people were like, this is why players play for Trotz. He's inspirational. He's this, he's that. What's the best advice you've ever gotten from a head coach? Putting you on the spot a little here.
Yeah, I mean, the best advice, I don't know. Put me on the spot here. I would say, Torts is good because he hammers it home.
Okay.
And it might not be what you want to hear. You know what I mean?
Right.
And one of the things, it wasn't really life advice, it's like, but he said it in a game, but you could use it in life. He said, you're there, but you're not. So a lot of times, or don't believe in what people are telling you as a player. Like if you're a goalie and you're playing a second back-to-back, don't believe you're tired because they're saying you're tired because you're playing a second of back-to-back. And like it goes in life too. Don't listen to what everybody says is the way you're supposed to feel.
Right.
You can tell yourself how you're going to feel in the situation. I think Torts is really good in that mental side of the game. I think you could spill that over into life. You know, don't let don't let everybody else's opinion on something
influence yours.
Yeah. You could, and you're there, but you're not, was one in a hockey reference that, you know, you're there, you're kind of doing, it's kind of like going through the motions. I'm kind of doing what I'm supposed to do, but I'm not really accomplishing anything.
Right.
Where he's like, no, if you're going to go, don't do it then. Either do it and do it right,
or right.
don't do it at all. And I think that's pretty like black and white. I like that.
I love that you brought up Tortorella because he's a guy that I would love to do a life coach segment with. I think he'd be great at it.
He would be good.
He'd be funny, I think.
We might need the censor button though. Beep, beep.
Yeah, like, well, you know him. You gotta. Right? I already said this to Scott Hartnell. Like, you gotta hook me up. You gotta get Torts to come on and do the life coach segment. But this has been fun. I'm sure we'll have you on pretty soon, but let us know on social media. Use the hashtag Puck Culture. What's an under-the-radar or off-the-cuff player that you would put on your all-decade NHL team? We want to kind of spark that conversation and see what you guys have to say. Other than that, though, thanks for listening. Thanks for watching if you're watching us on YouTube. We'll see you next week.